report says Wisconsin cities and villages rely on property taxes far more than most states. We're talking about this study, what it means for Wisconsin, here on The Morning Show. Last month, the Wisconsin Policy Forum published a report that found Wisconsin ranks 7th in the nation and top in the Midwest for reliance on property taxes. What changes would you like to see in your taxes? And city officials, what does your community need to fund local services? What conversations are you having around taxes? We're at 800-642-1234. Rob Hankin is president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. That's a nonpartisan statewide policy research organization, and he's joining us from our WPR studios in Milwaukee. Rob, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks for having me.
So before we make any comparisons or throw out any numbers, how are property taxes used here in Wisconsin?
Well, there are several uses of property taxes. The foremost among them, without question, is school districts. So if you look at sort of the property tax pie across the state, roughly in the mid-40 percentages of all of those property taxes go to support school districts. After that, we have municipalities and county governments are the biggest recipients, but property taxes also support technical college districts and also special districts like the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewerage District.
So do we know how much municipalities rely on property taxes? How much do they depend on them?
Well, our research found that when we take a look at all of the revenue streams that support municipal governments in the state of Wisconsin, about 42% of that revenue comes from the property tax. Now, not sure that sounds like a lot to your listeners. We all know that property taxes are pretty darn high in the state of Wisconsin. But what was really striking is when we compared that to the other 50 states. The national average is 23.3% for municipalities across the nation. And in the Midwest, as you mentioned in your lead, we are head and shoulders above in terms of that percentage reliance.
So what does that mean, though, for local services in our cities and villages?
Well, it's really in the eye of the beholder. I don't think there's any question that in many respects, the property tax is a perfectly legitimate and justifiable way to finance local government services, making sure that property owners who are the most extensive users of most municipal services, that they support those services through their property tax bills is not a bad idea. The question is, should we have as much reliance as we do? And should there be other forms of taxation that could also take advantage of other consumers of municipal services? You take cities like Milwaukee or Madison and other big cities across the state, and clearly there are, in the case of Milwaukee, tens of thousands of commuters coming into the city every day using city services. But because there is no local city sales or income tax, for example, those commuters really aren't paying in terms of the services they're using. The same goes for visitors and patrons of sporting events and entertainment.
Oh, so you can't like just capture some of that stream of impact on local services, that more transient stream.
That's correct. We do have, of course, income taxes and sales taxes in Wisconsin. But in the case of the income tax, all of the income tax proceeds are going to state government. And in the case of the sales taxes, most counties are able to do a half cent or have elected to do a half cent county sales tax. But when we think of the overall state sales tax, the vast majority of those revenues also go to state government.
So over a decade ago, state-imposed caps were placed on property taxes. Why was that, and what were they meant to do, these caps?
The caps were a very strong signal from the legislature and the governor that the property tax burden on citizens had just grown too severe. And so what do you do about that situation? One approach would be to say, well, we're going to increase state aids to local governments, or we're going to provide other local options. The decision was made, however, instead to go the route of capping property taxes. So there were some pretty stringent limits placed on the ability of municipal governments and county governments, for that matter. We also have revenue limits for school districts. But essentially, they were limited really in terms of annual growth of their property tax levies by only being able to increase those levies by the rate of new construction in their community. We had done some previous research that found that whereas when that cap was enacted, that concept was enacted, we were seeing new construction growth in municipal governments, in municipalities across the state of 2, 3, 4%. The vast majority of municipalities today are seeing growth of under 2%. So again, we can have a debate about what's the proper level of tax increase in terms of property taxes every year. But if you have municipal governments that year after year are capped at levy increases in the 0 to 1 to 1.5% range, that's likely to take its toll because costs are growing at faster than that rate.
We're talking with Rob Hankin, the president of Wisconsin Policy Forum, looking at property taxes. Let's go to Jeff now in Delafield with thoughts on this. Jeff, hi.
Yes, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. The comment I wanted to make is in relation to the tax breaks that large agricultural interests get across the state. And I think it's putting a disproportionate burden on other landowners, and it's also causing some poor conservation decisions. We see a lot of our woodlands being removed and converted to row crop farming.
Jeff, thanks for the call. Let's look a little bit on business tax breaks and the impact that you see there, Rob.
So, I can't comment specifically on the caller's concern. There is a debate going on right now in Governor Evers' budget, which he introduced last week, a call to reduce tax breaks that are provided to manufacturers, for example. But really, the larger question and the question that we're hoping will be debated in a very realistic and thoughtful way is, what is the proper mix of taxes that we want to support government services in the state of Wisconsin? We've been tinkering around the edges of that question for many, many years. But I think the point we're trying to make when we take a look at the way we finance our local governments in the state, there have been other studies about our over-reliance on income tax as opposed to sales tax in terms of funding state government services, that it's really time just for a fresh look and to try to determine what is the fairest, most equitable way to have our mix of taxes, but also what are the most reliable ways so that governments can count on inflationary increases in their revenue streams, given, again, that services, the cost of services do tend to increase in many cases above the rate of inflation.
Let's bring in Christine now, joining us from Eau Claire. Christine, hi. What's on your mind about this conversation?
Good morning. I really think we have to look at this public-private partnership, and I put partnership in quotes, trend, because with TIF districts included in that, taxpayers are paying a larger portion of what developers and other corporations normally would contribute to a community. But, for example, Foxconn and Mount Pleasant, how much of that blighted land is excellent farmland, and what are the Mount Pleasant taxpayers on the hook for in terms of infrastructure? It's huge.
Christine, thanks for the call. And she's looking at the trade-offs here. What do we know, Rob?
Well, again, I think both calls exemplify the fact that people have very strong feelings about the fairness of our existing tax system, whether in some cases our corporations, our developers paying their fair share. In other cases, as I mentioned, our commuters and visitors paying their fair share when it comes to municipal services. I think what this illustrates is that it's time for a real solid look at the variety of mechanisms we use. The tax incremental financing issue is one that our organization is actually studying very deeply this year. There is a provision in the governor's budget that suggests that the amount that can go to developers as opposed to the cost of infrastructure in terms of districts needs to be limited. So I think these are all important issues and really need to be looked at as a whole. But then we need to sort of slice off the pieces that support state government, that support counties, that support school districts and technical college districts. And again, try to determine what is the fairest, most reliable, most balanced approach here.
We're almost out of time, but when you say incremental finance, what do you mean by that?
Tax incremental financing is a pretty complicated endeavor, but it essentially represents the fact that it's a huge tool for local governments that when they are trying to encourage development that would not occur without substantial investment in infrastructure, that you essentially use the incremental growth in the property value of the land within the district. You capture those property taxes from that incremental growth and you use it to pay the debt on the infrastructure.
Well, another change would be to offer local option sales taxes or increase in state sales tax. What are the upsides and downsides there?
Great question. And again, I think a point of emphasis here is that there is no perfect solution. There's no tax that I'm going to hold out to you and say, hey, this is a tax that everybody will enjoy paying. But there are pros and cons. So for a sales tax, again, one of the benefits is you're essentially taxing consumption. If you are consuming something within the boundaries of a jurisdiction, that means you're there. That means that ostensibly you're using city services. So that's one way to get at consumption. On the other hand, sales taxes tend to be regressive. A 1% sales tax is going to apply to somebody who's making $10,000 a year and also somebody who's making $1 million a year. So that's a downside of the sales tax. Property taxes have, of course, their upsides and downsides, too.
So at a stop in Milwaukee last month, Governor Evers said he hoped to address this by providing local governments with more state aid, and lawmakers are considering the governor's first budget now. How are you seeing this come up in conversations about policy at the statewide level?
Well, again, there's several different ways that you could skin this cat. To the extent that there is agreement that across the state, municipal governments are facing some very fierce financial challenges because of this revenue structure and the property tax levy limits and essentially the framework that we've set up, there are a few ways you could address that. One way is indeed to have state government share more of its resources with local governments. In the governor's budget, there is a proposal for a 2% increase in shared revenues that would flow to municipalities, as well as increases in local transportation aids. Whether that's sufficient, I think you'd have to go municipality by municipality to answer that question. So that's one approach. Another approach is to relax the property tax levy limits and allow municipal governments to increase their levies more than they're currently able to do so. And a third approach is the one that we've put on the table, which is should we be looking at a different mix of taxes to support municipal governments in the state?
Rob, thank you for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Rob Hankin is president of the Wisconsin Policy Forum. We've been talking about their latest report called Dollars and Cents. Is it time for a new municipal financing framework in Wisconsin? And he joined us from our WPR studios in Milwaukee. You can find this conversation about property taxes right here on the Ideas Network.